For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, believe it or not, I am excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And as promised, we're going to be taking the big picture look. So it's been five baseball games. We did talk about the home opener, but I'm going to look at these first five games once through the starting pitching order, right? And look at the biggest takeaways on the negative and positive side. In fact, I'm going to start with, I think, the things that people out there are probably most concerned with and work our way so that we're ending the podcast with the best silver linings I can come up with for you, right? Because I know that there are a lot of people who tune in specifically for that. So let's begin with the things that I think people are most concerned about. At the very top of the list has to be Chris Bryant. Right, he's over the season, striking out almost every single at bat. He did have one tough one in that Cubs game where he hit a hard line drive. It was 103 miles an hour off of the bat. I thought it should have been ruled a base hit. They came back and changed it to an error, which, okay, whatever. That one base hit doesn't magically change everything, to be sure. But it is worth noting that as lost as he looked in Arizona, where he just wasn't even making contact at all, that first game in Chicago did look a little bit better. That said, you know, is this panic time already on Chris Bryant? And I've seen a lot of people out there suggesting, you know, bench him or send him down. Even first of all, at this stage in a guy's career, you don't send people to AAA and AA. It's just not a thing that's done, for those of you asking. And there are a lot of reasons why that's the case. Certain contracts, a certain amount of experience in the league, the players union would never allow for it. But even consider this, like the sign that that sends to everybody else in that lineup, thinking that you're in an organization that might, you know, do something that rash in that moment isn't, I think, a good sign to send out to everybody. So I know it's brutal to watch. I know that it's not just also these five games. So that's the other thing I would say to people. Someone's like, aren't you incredibly concerned with how terrible he's looked in these five games? On the one hand, yes, but I'm actually far more concerned with how generally mediocre he's looked in the last 125, 130 games, right? Because we all know this, and this is a great time to start practicing what we preach out there, right? Small sample size in baseball is very real. I'm going to tell you a quick story, and I promise this isn't to, you know, say there's absolutely nothing to be worried about, but a couple of years ago, when CJ Krohn first came to the Colorado Rockies, his first couple of weeks weren't just bad, they were this bad, and not just five games. It was 2-3 weeks where CJ Krohn was striking out 80 or 90% of the time, was not delivering anything on offense, to the extent that I had somebody ask me if I would go on to my show at the time and basically discuss the possibility that CJ Krohn would be completely out of baseball by the end of the month, that the guy didn't have it anymore, that he was going to have to retire, that it was that bad, right? Because when you watched it, and some of these at-bats were not competitive. He was swinging, he was striking out on three pitches. You were seeing him swing at curveballs that were bouncing in the left-handed batter's box. It was awful. But I said to this person at the time, look, baseball is a weird game and you can go from looking that awful. Like if a basketball player looked that terrible in one game, it would be a sign of a potential problem, right? And I said this kind of similarly about Kyle Freeland. Like you can't go too overboard with those small sample sizes. And you have to let a guy be bad for, and I know that even 3 weeks feels like forever. And these five games feel like forever right now because it's all we've got. And he hasn't just been bad. He has been dreadful. Absolutely terrible. Where the last 2 years I was telling you about Chris Bryant, like, hey, the results aren't there, but the process is still good. He's largely not swinging at pitches out of the zone. He's mostly making contact on pitches in the zone. He's just not getting good results. That is not the case these five games, right? The process is bad. The results are bad. Everything is bad. But no, and I'm going to apply this to the next conversation that we're going to talk about, where I think there's probably going to be a little bit more of agreement because the player is much younger. But the reason I brought up Crone is because it was a similar case of a guy who had been coming off some injuries. The big difference with Crone is that it was his first time in Colorado, and so he was, you know, making his first impressions, and there were all of this, and a lot of people didn't know what else you could possibly look to, right? But you have to be patient in the game of baseball. You have to think in terms of weeks and months, not even in terms of series sometimes, especially with a guy who's got as long a resume as Chris Bryant does. So, am I panicking about him? No, I'm not. And I'm sorry if that doesn't quite vibe with what a lot of people would want to hear. You know, and again, now this is why I didn't tell this story first. Years ago, I remember the last time I really, really panicked about a player coming out of the gate, because for the first month, he was the worst hitter in baseball, and he had, I think, like 15 more strikeouts than whoever was in second place. And that was Trevor Story in 2018. And he struggled throughout that year, his second year in the bigs. Now, this is going to start to move us into the conversation about Nolan Jones, by the way, right? That second year, especially when you were so hot as a rookie and kind of snuck up on people in a lot of ways, because you play for the Rockies, so you're going to sneak up on people. There's not going to be a huge scouting report on you. Well, now there is. Right? So to right before, I'm obviously moving into the Nolan Jones conversation now, but to put that final note on why I tend not to go overboard, because I really did with the Trevor Story thing. I was doing the whole, you got to bench this guy. He was a young enough player. It was like, we don't even, maybe the rookie season was a fluke, right? And you just really have got to be patient in the game of baseball. Now, again, on a team, if this team was expected to compete, maybe you do this early make a change like that. But there is no way out of this contract, and there is no way out of this situation beyond Chris Bryant playing better. If they bench him or cut him or something, then they just have to pay him all that money, and he's just a big problem on your books as anything else, and then you're just getting nothing for him. You're completely punting on any possibility that he may one day get better. And that's not, I think, where we are just yet, right? That, I think, is a bit much. So no, as brutal as it is, you got to keep running him out there and hope that a veteran with his experience and ability can put it together, get over whatever is bothering him right now. Lots of great hitters do go through these moments. Nolan Arenado, I remember one time a lot of people freaking about him because he went 0 for the World Baseball Classic. He was like 0 for 20. And, you know, people go, oh man, what's going on? So we'll see what happens. But no, it is still a bit early. Same exact thing, of course, applies to Nolan Jones, who, by the way, has looked bad on both sides of the baseball, and I certainly wasn't expecting that. Though again, I would remind people of Trevor Story. Those two things kind of went hand in hand. He didn't have as great a defensive year as he could have second year either, and he talked about this at the time because so many of his offensive woes were starting to bleed over, right? I can't speak for Nolan Jones. So, and I typically don't like to do the wild speculative thing, but I'll just say this. I'm totally guessing. This is a guess. This is speculation. Normally not the type of analysis I love to give you. But the guy was just, you know, from a game-to-game value, the best rookie in a National League. And while a lot of media and fans probably know who Corbin Carroll is much more, I promise you, the other coaching staffs, general managers, and ball players know who Nolan Jones is now. He's the guy you circle on the roster and say, okay, watch out for him. And there aren't too many of those guys. You know, as great as I've kind of pumped up guys like Brenton Doyle and Ezekiel Tovar and all the skills they have and the value they're bringing, they're not those guys yet. They're not watch out for him. Right now on this Colorado Rockies roster, this is another weird way to put it, and I wouldn't typically offer this as legitimate analysis on the podcast, but on MLB The Show, the video game, when you go and look at the Rockies roster, right, and players are ranked from, have a rating from like 40 at the very bottom to like 99 if you're, you know, Mike Trout, days of yore, Shohei Ohtani, right? They've got Nolan Jones at like an 88 and nobody else in the 80s, which I think is accurate. I think that's correct. That's how much better he is right now on paper and just in terms of actual value produced last season than everybody else on the team. And so he's batting in the middle of the order and guys are attacking him with all of their best stuff. And it's very, very early. And he could be in for a long season. I'm not going to lie to you. Sophomore slumps are a real thing specifically because of this. Pitchers that have been around the game 6, 7, 8, 12 years sometimes, some of whom have been on World Series championship teams, some of whom have participated in all-star games. These guys have been studying scouting reports forever, and now they've got a plan of attack for Nolan Jones. And we'll see how he adjusts. And I do think that some of his issues in the outfield, because his errors have been big old whoopsie-daisies, right? They look like, and again, this is kind of speculative because I'm not on the road trip and I can't ask him, but a guy who's just trying to do a little too much, right? He's trying to be the guy. He's trying to win the baseball game by himself, which is not a thing that you can do. You can win a basketball game by yourself. If you're a quarterback, you can win a football game by yourself. You cannot, at any position, win a baseball game by yourself. It's not possible. And I think he's just out there trying to do a little too much at the plate, in the field, and all of that. Now, having gotten to know him a little bit through the way that media can get to know these guys, I would suspect, I would...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bet on him to get over this faster than a lot of guys. I think he's got the right mentality. I think he's got the right approach. I think he'll get over that phase of, oh my God, a lot faster than other guys. Because, man, when the best pitchers in the world are circling you in the lineup, when they're saving their best pitch and they're not going to throw it to the guy in front of you because they're pretty sure they can get him out with their B pitch, they're saving their best stuff for you. Like, that's tough, man. But I do think that he's going to make the adjustments. We'll see how long it takes. I don't suspect the defense will be a long-term thing. That, to me, has got early season, new star guy jitters written all over it. And I think that just he's too good of an athlete, he's too quality of a player, that once he settles into the season, once he realizes that he doesn't need to do extra, now that he's, you know, the man, he doesn't need to be all that, he can just go out and play his game. And he doesn't need to overdo it. And you know, last year he admitted a lot in spring training. Remember, he went 0 for spring training? People were so excited about his possibility to make the team. And then he was one of the worst hitters in spring training. He was probably the worst hitter in all of spring training last year. And he admitted it was because he was putting so much pressure on himself, but also because he was trying so hard. He was trying to hit every ball 500 feet and make the team. He wanted to show off his cannon of an arm with every single throw. He wanted to make every defensive play. And it's like, you, again, back to what I guess is the theme of the conversation today, you've got to be patient in the game of baseball. You can't hit a 5-run home run, and you can't hit a 3-run home run with nobody on base. Right? So I think this is all a part of the learning process for Nolan Jones. Like I said, it could be a long and difficult sophomore season for him, and I think that that would be okay too, because as we've seen with lots of other guys, I mentioned Trevor Story earlier, Todd Helton went through a little bit of it. Cargo was a guy who had his ups and downs and got sent back forth a couple of times. But I do think that Jones is going to come out of this all right. I'm not, again, for far more reasons than the Chris Bryant thing, but for even the ultimate reason that five games is just five games. There was a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, the Rockies defense started out awful, particularly Ryan McMahon, which was weird because he had just shown the year before to be so good. But because he only had that 1 year of huge DRS, defensive run saved, at third base, that second year we're like, oh, maybe it was a fluke. Maybe this guy's going to be in for a year. He's going to commit a ton of errors. And his errors that season ended up being pretty high, highest of his career. I think he got into like 12 or 13, 14 errors. But his DRS, you know, it ended up evening out. He ended up being a great defender that year. Because, of course, 2 or 3 weeks of defense that just make you want to tear your hair out don't make for a full baseball season of bad defense. So it is okay to take some deep breaths and pump some brakes on particularly that. And that's the last thing I wanted to talk on, the especially bad stuff, is the defense in general. I would apply the same thing to Tovar. Throughout that Arizona series, it looked like he was... Now, he got a lot of funky hops. I will say this. It seemed like weird in-between hops just kept finding him. But that said, last year, he handled a ton of funky, weird in-between hops. He was one of the most sure-handed guys in all of baseball. And so even though some of them weren't errors, some were ruled as hits and fairly enough, there were several plays in that Arizona series that Tovar could have made and last year did make, and he just didn't. And so does that mean, you know, is he slumping? Did it just happen to be the case that he didn't make those and all of that's going to even out? What's going on there? But I did want to just sort of, you know, put that in as the last point, because I think just like with Jones, that's unlikely to continue. It's tough when, again, you've only got the five games that you've seen, and outside of one game, they really just haven't looked like a put-together baseball team on the field, but that's often going to be the case. This is what rebuilds look like, right? When you've got a lot of guys out there trying to make it for the first time or trying to follow up after their first season and prove that they can get better, and right out of the gate, it's the National League champions and, you know, this incredible lineup and all of that. Like, yeah, you're a rebuilding team playing a really good team. Some of it's going to look pretty ugly. But still, I didn't think the defense was going to look as bad as it has. I think there's a bit of randomness to that, but it's something we will definitely be keeping a close eye on. Now let's move right into the middle, the mediocre, the stuff that is meh, as the kids used to say. I don't know, that was more my generation, I think, than anything, was meh. But the starting pitching, right? After Kyle Freeland, who really did get pretty well blown up in that game, I would qualify just about all of the rest of these starts as somewhere on that scale of meh. Quantrill was probably the most meh, if that makes sense. In other words, Quantrill came out of the gate in his game, and his two most reliable pitches for him throughout his career, his sinker and his cutter, weren't finding the spots he wanted to. In fact, he gave up a home run on each pitch. The cutter was very poorly located to Gurriel. The sinker actually wasn't poorly located, which might have shook Quantrill even more, because he threw that sinker right where he wanted to Christian Walker. It was in off the plate, and Walker just went down and golf swinged it out. Some of that's he's a great hitter who kills the Rockies. He's hot. All of that, great hit. Maybe the sinker didn't have as much movement as Quantrill wanted, but he got rocked for 3 runs in that first inning, right? What I really did like about his start was then he just made a total gameplay adjustment and was much better through the rest of the game. He started throwing a lot of splitters and changeups. He basically said, hey, these guys are on my sinker and cutter. They came out looking for it. I don't have my best version of them today. I am in the second inning of the first start of the season going to throw out the game plan and create a new one on the fly against the National League champions. And it largely worked. He was able to get through the next several innings right before the defense kind of let him down. Right. And I would say a similar thing happened with Gomber, where he kind of came out. He, you know, a couple of pitches weren't where he wanted, but they were also all over him. He made a gameplay adjustment. He was able to get through his innings. Feltner was, all three of those guys basically had that kind of start where they came out, they didn't have their best stuff, a hot offense was jumping on them. They made their adjustments and were able to figure out a way to get close to, and Feltner came the closest to actually getting to the good old quality start, as it were, right? And I thought Feltner's fastball in particular looked really good at times. He was getting some swings and misses. He was getting more uncomfortable at bats out of the Arizona Diamondbacks than anybody in that series. And that was pretty cool to see. And that's something that I think that he can build on. And once again, the defense behind him was shaky. Not as shaky as it was, though, behind Dakota Hudson. We already talked about Nolan Jones, but that was a rough play. And I think, you know, probably the worst defensive play, hopefully the worst defensive play you're going to see him make all year. But hey, Dakota Hudson, now, to be fair, he didn't have to face that Arizona Diamondbacks lineup, and he did. The very first thing he did was walk the leadoff guy. And if you all remember my conversations about him in the offseason, or whenever I talk about Dakota Hudson, it's... I fear those walks. When they acquired him, I went, okay, there's an interesting profile here, but you just cannot give away the amount of free passes he has throughout his career at Coors Field. You're gonna get killed for it. That said, he pitched a hell of a ball game. I mean, he pitched a hell of a ball game. And as I mentioned, you know, really got undone by a double error in left field. And quite frankly, you know, with the lack of Rockies offense, one key base hit, the Cubs are going to win that game anyway. But I do think Hudson at the very least gets the, you know, another inning out there, can go out and have a solid six innings pitch, no runs given up type of game. Instead, it all sort of fell apart there. But I just thought he looked really, really good. I thought he was hitting his spots. Even the walk there at the beginning, there was only one pitch that I felt was egregiously out of the zone. The rest of it was kind of, he was nibbling. That's what he does. That's why he walks a lot of guys. He's a nibbler, but he threw a ton of pitches, right? And this is sort of the old pitching 101, right? If you're just understanding at the very basic level what makes a good pitch, a lot of times anything that starts as a strike and ends up not as a strike, or vice versa, starts out looking like it's not going to be a strike but ends up in the zone. And most of the pitches that Dakota Hudson threw in that game were of that variety. They have starting in the zone and sweeping and cutting and sinking out of the zone, or vice versa. I just thought he pitched a hell of a ball game as somebody who was not in any, it's funny, man, of all these guys, I'm always excited to watch Kyle Freeland pitch, and it sucks he got blown up by like that, but as a Colorado native, as a, you know, a lot of us are just always going to want to watch Kyle Freeland pitch, right? Cal Quantrill was the guy I actually thought had a really good chance to come in and pitch the type of ball game that Dakota Hudson did. Gomber finished so well last year, I was really curious to see how he would do the first time out. And Feltner's got the best stuff of any of these guys and is younger than the rest of them. So from a prospect standpoint, he's the most interesting. And all of that was so, as I said, just kind of meh. But then Dakota Hudson, who I was not excited about at all, comes out and pitches the best game of all of them. So, baseball. All right, let's talk about a handful of silver linings I've got for you. This one will be relatively short because I actually did cover this after the first game. It was true then, but it remains true now. The bullpen has been actually pretty decent. Particularly, I would point out Jalen Beeks. I really liked what I've seen out of him. And Victor Vodnik. Again, I made a big deal out of this on the last one. So if you really want to get in depth with the Vodnik talk, go back to the last podcast. But I did sort of point out that he's one of the key guys throughout the year. His stuff looks absolutely fantastic. If he can just stay in whatever zone he's in right now, you know, I was saying last time, I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets sent down, called up, but not if he just keep doing exactly what you're doing right now, and you're not going to get sent to AAA. He looks great. This was only one game, but I did want to point out, I loved what I saw out of Michael Tolia. Tolia got on base a couple of times, got a base hit, got hit, but had a nice at-bat, saw a lot of pitches, which is something that he's always done. One of the things on Michael Tolia is that he will work a 3-2 count just about every time, but then it's 50-50 whether or not he's going to strike out or walk, or, you know, then every once in a while he's going to give you that home run. And that's what they've really been trying to improve upon with him. He's maybe the only guy in the organization that needs to see fewer pitches. It's like, dude, you got to fire at the one that's there for you. I thought he looked great, though. I love his patience. I love how many pitches that he sees. Not only did he get on base twice, but he had a deep drive to right center field that just fell short of going out of the ballpark. So really, he was, you know, the most on it in that game of anybody at the plate for the Rockies. And he turned a pair of double plays that he started and finished at first base, which is really, really good stuff. That can sometimes be a difficult play. I know that most people listening to this are well aware of the defensive scouting report on Michael Tolia, which is that he's incredible, but it still is nice to see just how good and smooth he is in real life when he makes plays like that. It shows you the kind of difference maker he could be on defense, but you only get to play if you can hit, which he did throughout all of spring training, and I don't think he could have asked for a much better. I mean, if that ball had gone over the wall, sure, then you get credit for the home run, but I promise you from a coaching and analytics standpoint, they look at that as a successful at-bat and another reason why they're not going to be worried. In fact, they may look for another earlier opportunity to get Michael Tolia back in there. Only two more on the silver lining side for you. This one isn't massive because we know Ryan McMahon can be streaky and it's not like he's hitting the ball over the wall a ton, but he has been hitting well in the early going. Batting average is what it is, five games in, but .389, he's making the contact. Again, we can't run away with that too much because we know how streaky he's been in the past, but if you're going to be more consistent, one way to do that is to start out well, right? And try to maintain that contact. So obviously, just how up and down his bat is something that we'll always be watching in terms of Ryan McMahon, but he's one of the very few guys who, from a batting average standpoint, is off to a nice start. But for me, the best silver lining, and this is an interesting one because the numbers aren't great, but the thing I've been most impressed by early in the season from the Colorado Rockies, which matters in a long term, is Alauris Montero. Now, again, when you look at the numbers, he's batting like, what is it, 187? He only has a couple of hits, right? 143, there it is. Two hits, three walks, three strikeouts. But this goes back to what we've been talking about in terms of process. All the things that I was saying suddenly Chris Bryant is not doing, those are the things that Alauris Montero has done in, I think, now I'd have to go back and see if he had any individual at-bat that was just terrible. I want to say every single at-bat he has taken this year has been a competitive one, even the strikeouts. Every manager in baseball will tell you there's a difference between going up there, you know, looking at two in the zone and then swinging at a slider out of the zone for a strikeout, and then going up there, battling into a 3-2 count, fouling off a couple of pitches, and then striking out on the seventh or eighth pitch of an at-bat, right? There's a big difference between those two things, even though in the box score, ultimately, it says the same thing. You struck out. Montero's process this season has been head and shoulders fundamentally better than it was before. He's managing to lay off of specifically that breaking ball that kind of starts down around the thighs and the knees and then drops into the dirt. That's been his bugaboo, if I may use such a word, in the past. It's been something that's really gotten the better of him. He mashed fastballs throughout his minor league career. The handful of fastballs he's managed to get in the majors, he's done pretty well with. But again, we know, well, okay, scouting, these guys are smart. They're the best pitchers in the world. If they know you can hit a fastball, but you struggle with anything else, guess what you're going to see? And so he has done a great job of adjusting, at least from a process standpoint. So he's taken far fewer uglier swings. The swings that he is taking are confident at the baseball. He's had a couple of loud outs as well, which is one of the reasons why I'm not super worried about the lack of actual production. There's the two liners I can think of off the top of my head that are going to fall probably 80 to 90% of the time and probably for extra base hits. And then you're looking at a much healthier early looking stat line for Alauris Montero. But the process. This is a guy you're circling as a top 10 most important player for whichever way he goes on the Rockies this year. He could be their DH of the future. He could be a middle of the lineup type of guy. He could be. Remember when I was talking earlier about Nolan Jones being the guy? You circle on the thing. You know, Brenton Doyle is, I don't think, ever going to be that player. The guy you go, his value is going to come elsewhere, and that's great. You need a certain number of guys in the lineup who the opposition comes in and goes, I don't know how we're going to deal with him today. And as I said, right now, the only guy there, even with his numbers this early, I promise you the Cubs aren't relaxed and saying, he's been bad this year. Let's just kind of pipe a couple get-me-over fastballs to Nolan Jones. I promise you they're still bringing their best stuff for that guy. But Alaurys Montero is the type of hitter who I think could emerge as another one of those guys you've really got to be concerned about. But it could also go the other way. The strikeouts are real. The process has to lock in. And so far, the process in 24 has been fantastic for Alaurys Montero. So I know there's not a lot to get super excited about with this team, but there's my best in terms of the silver linings and a little bit of why I'm trying not to overly panic about the other stuff. But I appreciate you all for listening in. Make sure you're hanging out with us on social media and on TikTok and Instagram on Mile High Sports. Got a lot of those fun videos coming out for you documenting all of this. Some of it may have to be a little more Rockies past oriented if the current team is going to not give us a whole lot of fun things to talk about. But I promise you they will. At some point, there are going to be things out here that we're going to be able to dive into a little more interestingly here in the next couple of days and weeks. So thank you all for listening into this. I hope you will continue to be absolutely awesome out there. You know that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.